Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, business, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on homeschool when we come back. You know, a $10 pizza has a 38% tax on it. And a Budweiser six-pack has a 43% tax, and a fifth of Jack Daniels is taxed 72%. Now, governments tax us all, and they tax anything that wiggles, moves, or squirms. But what is it that government actually does to produce, prepare, or deliver, for which the government gets paid 38% for a pizza, 43% for a beer, or 72% for a drink? Does the pizza parlor guy make 38% profit on that pizza that he has to buy the ingredients to make? He has to prepare it, cook it, serve it, and then pay rent on the store that you sit in to eat it. Does he make 38% on that pizza? Now, why does government get paid more in tax than the people who actually produce, prepare, and deliver the goods and services that we all buy? Well, if you'd like more information about tax and status, call us here at the law school. The number is 417-273-4967. Once more, that's area code 417-273-4967. While you're at it, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package. Now, that's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. Our school, Tax and Status, is available on compact disc for adult home education. And if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, and click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, that's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives page and download it. When I went to public school back in 1944, I think it's the year I started, 45, first grade teacher, Mrs. Sorensen, and one of the things that we learned immediately when we walked in the door, first day in school, was that you can't cheat, you can't lie. In other words, here in public school, we were taught the Ten Commandment model. It is true that we didn't learn the Ten Commandments, and we didn't learn about Moses and where they came from. But we were practicing. We, in our society, in our community, everybody practiced the Ten Commandment model of morality, of law. And I learned that when I was a little kid growing up. But when I got into the first grade, see, when we were doing a test, the teacher would tell us very plainly, do not look at your neighbor's paper. Don't look over here to see what his answer is so that you can write down your answer from his paper. That's stealing. That's dishonest. That's wrong. Now, as time went on, as I went through the public school system, by the time I got out to the 12th grade, that was no longer true. So between 1944 and 1957, there was a shift in the moral climate in public school. Then I observed from the time that I left school until about 1970, during the hippie era and the Vietnam War era and so on, that there was a major shift in the morals and morality of Americans. And then from the 1970s, after the Vietnam War in 75, from 75 to 85, 95 to 2000, in that 25-year period, I've noticed another humongous shift it was like a tidal wave shift in morality. It got to the point where Bill Clinton could have a sexual affair in the Oval Office, lie about it, be impeached for it, and the people of America, 72%, sided with and backed Bill Clinton and his behavior. Now, the other day I saw another example of this, the seismic shift in morality over this thing of homosexuality in the military. Homosexuality back in the days when I was a child growing up was something that was so wicked, so bad, so awful, so terrible, that you kind of talked about it in hushed terms and you didn't talk about it in front of your children. Now, I knew about it when I was 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old, and children talk among themselves, and I'd heard the term and one thing another, but I know that there weren't any where I lived. That's because they were all in the closet. That is, if there were any, they were all in the closet. Nobody would admit to it. If you'd asked somebody, and the word gay never appeared. It was sodomite, you know. So, queer was the common vernacular term. Now, when we went to church or Sunday school or we had any discussion about morality, this thing of sodomy would come up, and it was one of the worst sins that you could commit. A man could go out and commit adultery with his neighbor's wife. That was bad. Oh, my God, that was terrible. But sodomy was even worse than that. You could go out and rob a bank. And that was bad. But sodomy was worse than that. There wasn't anything that I can think of in the society that was worse than sodomy. All right, so now just picture that in your mind. Now you picture in your mind, what is it the worst thing that you can think of that people can do today? Is it murder somebody? Is it serial murders? Or is it, you know, treason? Sodomy? Theft, you know, failure to put a quarter in the parking meter, you know, whatever it is. There's a standard that's set out in the Bible, and God himself has a little place in there. He says, there's seven things that I hate in the book of Proverbs. Seven things, he says, that I hate. And he lists these seven things. And you probably have seven things that you hate. If you were to sit down and say, what are the things that I hate the most over here? Would sodomy be one of them? Well, the other day, the Congress repealed Don't Ask, Don't Tell, so that sodomites in the military could be what they call come out of the closet, and they can be up front and open about it. And they've been pushing this. Sodomy in the military has been pushed in this country for the last 50 years. The objective, the synthesis, antisynthesis there that's been employed over the last 50 years is to get the military open to sodomites. And now they have just succeeded. But here's the thing that really caught my eye. They reported that 72% of Americans now approve of sodomy and open gay service in the military. That's the same percentage that approved of Bill Clinton's conduct in the Oval Office. The theory behind Bill Clinton's conduct was is that what he does in his private life and his private time is his business. Now, that's a false premise, because what he does in his spare time is a part of his character, and character is the measure of a person. Can you do business with this person? Now, I do business with people every once in a while. And when I do, once in a while, I run across a thief, a guy that is a liar, a thief, a cheat, and so on. First of all, I avoid people like that. If I get wind of the fact, if I talk to another businessman who's had experience with this person, and he gives me a heads up and says that I wouldn't do business with him. I have in the past, and I won't anymore. That sends the signal to me. Then I would be better off not doing business with them, and I don't. But once in a while, I don't get that heads up, and then I have the first-hand experience. Now, when that happens, do I go back and do business with that guy again? The answer is no. I stop doing business with him. And the same thing ought to be true when we find that somebody is a liar, a cheat, and a thief, and so on. But lying, stealing, and cheating are so ingrained in American society today that we all take it for granted. It's the normal way of doing business. It ought not to be, but it is. And this is a seismic change in one lifetime. See, I'm old now and full of years, but I can think back, you know, to when I was 6 years old, 10, 12, 15, 20, 25, 30. And I've been observing a slow, gradual synthesis, anti-synthesis move in the entire society from morality in the Ten Commandments to immorality in the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto. So as we're talking about homeschool and public school, where will you find morality and righteousness? It's not in the public school system. In fact, the public school system teaches immorality. Immorality. It's a part and parcel of the synthesis, anti-synthesis program. The powers that be wanted to get control of the public school system so that they could pervert the entire society. And there's a motivation behind it, and here's what it is. Way back at Mount Sinai, you and I are the offspring of the people who were there, the Israelites. And we are the beneficiaries of some very important financial deals that were made back then in 1329 BC. And Moses negotiated a transaction, a business transaction, a contract, if you will. It's called the Old Covenant in the Scripture. And an outgrowth of that business transaction, there was a lot of money that transacted. And the money that transacted, the benefits that came from it, were pretty sizable. It involved a lot of real estate, a lot of hard money, gold and silver, coin, a lot of livestock, that is cattle. And there were, in total, in all, there's 33 benefits that come from or spring from that covenant. And one of those benefits is that I will make your enemies to be at peace with you, and your enemies will come out against you one way, and they'll flee before you seven ways. I'll be your God, and you be my people. It was a mutual defense pact. A mutual defense pact. And it works, it works very similarly to the mutual defense pact that we have with the Europeans. We Americans have a mutual defense pact with you Canadians and you Australians and New Zealanders and all of you people in Europe. We call this the NATO alliance. And what that spells out, if anybody attacks, if the Russians were to attack Belgium, it would trigger this mutual defense pact. And we Americans, Canadians, and Australians would come to the aid of Belgium, and we would go to war against anybody that brought war against Belgium. You know, just this little rinky-dink country over in Europe, sandwiched in here between France and Germany, or Luxembourg, you know, or the Netherlands, you know, just that's what happened in World War II. The Germans attacked those three; they call them the Low Countries, and so that triggered the Western response, and you know, World War II is history. Well, anyway. That's what happened with this old covenant. It's a mutual defense treaty. So if anybody attacks the United States of America, God Almighty Himself will defend the United States, Canada, Australia, New Zealand. There's a story in I think it's in Numbers, about a prophet. And this prophet was paid money to curse Israel. And so he came out and he said, I'm going to pronounce a curse on Israel. And he had a dream, and when he came time to pronounce the curse, he said, well, I can't. I've been collaterally stopped here by the creator of the universe. He told me that I couldn't do it. And that's where we are today. See, if a nation wants to attack the United States, Canada, Australia, France, etc., they can't do it. It's against the law, and God will protect them. Now, there's a caveat that goes along with that benefit. You can read about this. It's in Leviticus 26, verses 1 through 14, and Deuteronomy 28, verses 1 through 14 or 15, long in there. And you can read this story, and here's your benefit. But the caveat on this is that God himself, if we let down on the contract, if we don't perform on this contract, God himself will punish us. God himself is going to eat our lunch. And that's what happened to Japan. See, the Japanese attacked us at Pearl Harbor, and we went to war, and 6 months later, the war was won. One battle, the Battle of Midway, that's where World War II was won. It's true, it took another 3 years to subdue all of the resistance that the Japanese were throwing up, but the offensive action of the Japanese Empire ended at Midway. They never had another offensive action from that point on. For them, it was all defense, and it was all offense for our side. And it's because of that promise, that mutual defense pact that Moses negotiated with God on our behalf back in 1329 B.C. You can read about that. Your enemies will come out against you one way, but they will flee before you seven ways. And so at Midway, when that battle was over, the outcome of World War II was set in stone. That was the end of that argument. It was a little bit longer in the Atlantic War. It was March of 1943 that the last offensive action of the Germans came to fruition, and then from then on it was all a defensive on their part. So there are turning points that come along, and when these turning points come up, you'll find these in the Scripture, and God himself then will fight for us, and he will protect us and so on. There's one exception to that. When we violate the terms and conditions of our contract, God himself will punish us. And he says, I will destroy you. And he's done that to us several times in the past. So we have risen to prominence and then been destroyed. And every time that that happens, it happens because of our breach of contract. And right now, we Americans are in breach of contract. This is very serious for you Australians, New Zealanders, and Canadians. Because we're the ones that hold that nuclear umbrella over you. We're the ones that are protecting you. We just got our census back the other day. Got 308 million Americans. 308 million Americans sitting over here on the world's biggest economy and the world's biggest military establishment holds out this nuclear umbrella to protect you from the Chinese and the Russians. They would swallow you up, you Australians. There's only 30 million of you down there, you know. But there's fewer of you people in Australia than we have in California. We have more people in California, you Canadians, than you have in Canada. And if California were a separate, independent nation in the world, it would be the sixth largest economy on earth. Number six. That's how big that is. That's important to you, because as long as we're here, nobody's going to mess with you. But we're on the way out. And we're on the way out because we're in violation of our covenant, of our contract. Now, I'm going to read to you an article here. It's called That's Outrageous. It comes from a publication called the Reader's Digest. And written by a guy named Tucker Carlson as it relates to cheating in our public schools. And our public schools are now institutions that train and teach the people of America, the young people of America, to steal, to lie, to cheat. That's a killer. That's a violation of our contract with our Creator, and as a result of that, our Creator is going to eat our lunch. So as I mentioned when I opened the conversation, I said, there's been a tidal wave of change here. See, the people of America today support sodomy from a time during my lifetime, when I was born, where it was so wicked, so evil, we didn't even talk about it, it was so wicked and evil, that today we have embraced it. It's like having a constitutional right to practice this kind of perversion. And throughout the Scripture, throughout the Bible, Sodom and Gomorrah are buzzwords. They're watchwords that send a warning, like the word Titanic. You know, is like synonymous with presumptuousness And one guy said, he said, God himself couldn't sink this ship. Well, it was a good ship. It was a technological advance. But, you know, to get cocky and say God himself couldn't sink it, that's why I think God himself did sink it. That's just my personal opinion. I plan to ask him, did you sink the Titanic and do it on purpose just to show those guys that you could do it? I think the answer is going to be, yeah, I did. Yeah. Now, be that as it may, the same thing is true here of Sodom and Gomorrah. You know, did you destroy us over Sodom? Yep. Yeah, I did. I've done it before, and that's what I did again. And I think that's what's coming down. This don't ask, don't tell repeal over here. You see, don't ask, don't tell was a big move forward to bring sodomy into the military when Bill Clinton was president. It didn't go all the way. It just, you know, was a big step toward in that direction. This last step is the culmination. Now they have what they wanted. And that was to pervert the military with sodomites. Now they've succeeded. Okay. Now that's going to come to a no good end. It's going to come to a no good end because the creator of the universe isn't going to allow that. You know, I don't know when he's going to eat our lunch, but you can rest assured now that when this thing comes to fruition, Jesus the Messiah, he said that the people of Sodom and Gomorrah would rise up in the judgment and condemn this generation. And he said, if they had known, if they had had a warning, like you people have had, they would have repented in sackcloth and ashes. Now, the warnings that we've had and the examples that we've seen in Scripture all of our life tell us that that's an activity. You know, there are bad activities in life. You know, killing people isn't good. And robbing banks is pretty poor. But that won't destroy your nation. But sodomy will. That's the one that'll do it. That'll do it. And here's the kicker. It isn't that the majority of us are opposed to it. That's the killer. There was a time in my lifetime when 90% of people would have said sodomy is unacceptable behavior, and that's the end of the report. Today, 72% of Americans say it is acceptable behavior and we are in favor of it. And that's the Achilles heel right there. If that's the case, I don't know that that's the case, but that's what I see reported. It may be a false statistic, you know, I can't tell you that. But if that's anywhere near correct, then we have gone over the line. We have stepped over a boundary line over here that is going to spell the destruction of America, and by just direct results, the destruction of Australia, New Zealand, and Canada, and Western Europe right along with us. So that's where that thing is headed. Now here's Tucker Carlson talking about a public school teacher who gives an assignment, and there are some students that cheat, and there's a result that comes from this cheating. Yeah, and the teacher lost her job. Now watch this. Reading, cheating, and arithmetic. It's a 10th grader's dream. Your teacher catches you cheating, and your parents take your side. And that's exactly what happened last December to a group of sophomores at the Piper High School in Piper, Kansas. Now, this isn't in an inner-city school like New York or Chicago. Piper, Kansas. I don't even know where Piper, Kansas is. This is a rural school. We're out here in the boondocks of the Bible Belt of America. I mean, this is where the good people of America live, not in the ghettos of Los Angeles, Chicago, or New York now. Here's mid-America. The teacher was Christine Pelton. She had assigned her students a semester-long biology project. Now, when the kids turned in their papers, Pelton found that almost a quarter of them, 28 out of 118 students, that she found that the reports had been plagiarized. Now, plagiarized means that you've stolen the written text. Plagiarized. That's where I pick up a book and I feigned that I wrote it, or that this statement is mine, this is my idea. That's plagiarizing. So here on the Law Hour, you hear me say, now we give credit to the authors and the publishers and so on, that these books, these reports, this isn't George Gordon. See, I'm not that smart. So now if I wanted you to think I was that smart, then I'd make some of these real neat statements, and I'd say, ha-ha, see, that's me. I'm a pretty smart guy here. So that's what plagiarize means. Now, they not only plagiarized, but they plagiarized very poorly, according to Pelton. Entire sections of the papers were identical. They were copied from the same internet websites. And so these kids, being technologically advanced, they went to the internet and they got treatises, and papers, and biology reports, you know, and scientific the papers. And they just cited, they just quoted whole paragraphs, maybe pages out of these reports from other people, and then put their name at the bottom of it and said, hey, I researched this out, and here's my findings. Well, now, here's a surprising thing. You can check that out. And this is what the teacher did. Now, she had already warned her students about cheating and its consequences, and each of the 28 offenders received a zero on their assignment and a failing grade in the class, but only temporarily. You see, soon, parents of the 28 complained to the local school board, refusing to believe that their child had cheated. The penalty, all the parents said, was too harsh, and the school board agreed, and Pelton was instructed to give the cheaters partial credit for their work. The cheaters were thrilled, and the next day, Pelton told the Kansas City Star, I went to my class and tried to teach the kids, but they were whooping and hollering and say, we don't have to listen to you anymore. Her authority was now gone, and Pelton did the only thing she could. She immediately quit in protest. Now, most teachers don't do that. At many high schools and universities, cheating is routine. Teacher apathy is the norm. A series of studies by Rutgers University professor Donald McCabe found that on most campuses, more than 75% of students cheat. I'm going to underline that. In studies here in the United States, when you go out and you take a look at the problem and you try to determine, you know, what's the extent of it, they go out and they do surveys and they do studies and one thing and another. Now get this, 75% of students in America cheat. My God. Well, these people who are cheating in school, do you think they're going to cheat in business? Do you think they're going to cheat when they file an insurance claim? You think they're going to cheat when they fill out an application for employment? Maybe they're going to lie a little bit, maybe shade the truth a little bit. So here in the United States, and I would suspect that probably you people around the world probably have about the same problem, because the powers that be, this is the Illuminati, these are the Illuminists, the people who are creating this one world order, they want to destroy morality and the Ten Commandments. They want to replace that with the Ten Planks to the Communist Manifesto and immorality and chaos. Out of chaos comes order. So it's a concocted plan, and it's working. That's the crazy part of it. You know, it's worked like a shot. It's perfect. It's wicked. It's evil. And it's exactly backward. And it's going to come to a no good end. The ultimate end to this is business has to work with honesty. I forgot who it was that said this. It might have been George Washington or John Adams, one of them. He said, our Constitution was written for a moral people. You see, our Constitution, our freedoms, our liberties here in the United States, they're not designed well for immoral or wicked and evil people. It's designed for a moral people. We have to, there's an old saying from one of our forefathers. He said, he who is governed best is governed least. Self-government. You have to control yourself. You have to determine that theft is wrong and I'm not going to steal because that's wrong. Thou shalt not steal. And then we don't need to put locks on our doors because nobody's going to steal because everybody is trained, thou shalt not steal. Now, if we turn that around and we train everybody to steal and cheat, well, then if you want to keep these stealers and cheaters from robbing your home, then you have to put a lock on the door, don't you? And security cameras and all the rest of it. So, you know, we're bringing it, we become the proximate cause of our own injury. Now, if you, these 28 parents here destroyed the morals and the morality of their own children. That's what these parents have done. And then, of course, the students, they're just happy as clams at high tide. Hey, we did it and we got away with it. And they're going to go out into the real world and they're going to say, hey, listen, I expect to do it and I expect to get away with it. Unfortunately, out in the real world, it doesn't work quite that well. And I'm surprised that this thing worked here. But it did, and I'm reporting it to you. Tucker Carlson reported it to you. This is the outcome. This is the norm in public school. If you want to train your child to cheat, lie, and steal, public school is the place to send him. And 75% now, 75%, that's the results that you're going to get. If you want 3 out of your 4 children to grow up to be liars, thieves, and cheats, you can't miss with public school. That's a proven fact. Now, if you want your children to grow up to practice the Ten Commandments model, well, then we need to do something different. And that's why I've been pointing out to you, I think the homeschool program is probably a better program for us to follow. Hang on here, and I'll give you a mid-course reminder here that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. And we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's 8 schools in all. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has a radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. That's for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org. Then go to the archives page, click on the archives, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. All right, now the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. And these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, I'm citing a little treatise here on That's outrageous. Let me go through a little bit more. 75% of the students cheat here in the United States, and why wouldn't they? According to McCabe, a 1999 survey of 1,000 faculty members at 21 colleges found that one-third of those who were aware of student cheating in their course in the last 2 years did nothing to address it. So the college professors in the colleges, when they see cheating going on, they don't address the problem. In other words, there are far more plagiarists on campus than there are Christine Peltons to correct them. Now, the internet has made plagiarism particularly tempting. Dozens of websites with names like schools or schoolsucks.com offer pre-written term papers for sale at bargain prices. If you need a 5,000-word feminist consciousness and gender roles in pre-Columbian Latin America, it's only a mouse click away. So you can go to the internet now, and you can buy this stolen material. Isn't that special? Well, now, there are people out there that say, well, now, I'm going to aid and abet these people in their criminal behavior. I'm going to help them steal. Well, okay. And the people who are participating in the theft say, well, I'm not going to go out and do the actual work and research this out. What I'm going to do is I'm going to plagiarize it from somebody else. But I'm going to take credit for it. Now, that same guy, when he goes out into the real world, I'm going to show you in the next article here, will end up being unable to write. And so Americans are unable to write short stories. Well, it's because when they go to school, they can cheat their way through school, and they're going to get a diploma anyway. There isn't any need to work. And that's a part of this new world order. What we need to do is to pervert the society and get these people to dumb down and get lazy and stop working. And they've done that. It's been a total success. Well, people that don't work and people that sit on their ass and they lie, steal, and cheat are not the kind of leaders that can maintain their position as a world leader. And as a result of that, America is declining. We're in our decline. Our empire has reached its peak about 1950. We reached our peak. And now we're in our decline. And there's a point in time when we go into national captivity. That's the ultimate result. It's like Germany went into national captivity in May of 1945, and Japan went into national captivity in September of 1945. You know, the Roman Empire went into captivity in 476 A.D. and so on. There's an ultimate end that comes to this. You know, our actions are going to have a result. And I don't think that the average Joe Sixpack American today who is supporting sodomy has his eye on the ball and is saying, well, wait a minute, this is going to have a result down the line here 10, 15 years, you know. Do I want that kind of result? It's like going down to the whorehouse, you know. Are you thinking ahead to VD and sexually transmitted diseases? You know, when you go into the whorehouse, when you pick up that chick down here at the bar, you know, are you thinking about that? In most cases, no, because the little head rules over the big head. But the moral of the story is, Americans used to think ahead to the consequences and try to avoid bad consequences, which is the logical thing to do, but, you know, we're not doing that today. And so I don't see any good end coming from this. Now, on the other hand, so is discovery technology, and has made catching cheaters just as easy. Several websites offer software that automatically compares the text of a student's work against a database of thousands of term papers and published books and articles. If there's a match, there's likely plagiarism. So last year, a physics professor at the University of Virginia ran 1,850 of his students' papers through a service called Turnitin.com, and he came up with 122 cases of plagiarism. Christine Pelton used the same service to catch the 28 plagiarists in her class. Now, over the past few years, dozens of colleges have begun using similar software, but some haven't. And why is that? Well, because policing plagiarism might hurt a cheater's self-esteem. You know, if you catch a guy and you expose him, you know, for his crime, it might hurt his self-esteem. And I think the police ought to be thinking about that, and all you judges and prosecutors out there. When you catch a serial killer, do you really want to punish this guy and expose him because it might hurt his self-esteem? You know, do we apply that when we catch some sex pervert and he's out here killing a 10-year-old girl and raping her and so on? Do we say, well, gee, we don't want to hurt this guy's self-esteem? Well, I'll leave it to you and figure that out. Well, her colleague, Sandra Johnson, when Columbia University considered buying anti-plagiarism software, some in the college opposed the idea. Catching cheaters shouldn't be a hang-them-out-to-dry process, but rather an educational one, said Kathleen McDermott, the associate dean of the academic affairs, in an interview with the Columbia Daily Spectator. Her colleague, Sandra Johnson, the associate dean of student affairs, agreed. Columbia should deal with cheaters in a more sensitive, enlightened, and positive way, Johnson explained. When students plagiarize, that usually means there's something else wrong in their lives that needs dealing with. What sinister force is driving America's college students to cheat? Well, you guessed it, professors. They're the culprits. When professors fight plagiarism, warned Rebecca Moore Howard in an op-ed she wrote last year for the Chronicle of Higher Education, we risk becoming the enemies rather than the mentors of our students, and we're replacing the student-teacher relationship with the criminal-police relationship. And worst of all, we risk not recognizing that our own pedagogy needs reform. Big reform. As the director of writing program at Syracuse University, Howard would, you'd think, abhor plagiarism above all academic sins. Sure, she feels obliged to say that it's wrong to download someone else's work in total, but in the end, she sounds more like a skillful apologist. And in her telling students, plagiarize not because they're dishonest and lazy, but because they're tired. Many of them are working long hours at outside jobs and henpecked by perfectionist teachers. We deprive them, Howard writes, of a respectful audience if we tear apart the style, grammar, and mechanics of their papers, marking every error without discussing with them why it matters. We're not taking these people's papers apart. We're castigating them because they stole the work. You know, when you're writing a paper, and my wife told me a little story here when she was in high school, that other students who couldn't write or didn't want to write would hire somebody to write the paper for them. And, of course, now you got two criminals here. So you got the one that's writing the paper and taking money for it, and you got the one that's taking the paper and paying for it because it's dishonest. It's a theft is what it is. Now, if we want to build a society of thieves and cheats, you couldn't do a better job than we're doing right now in America. We've already accomplished. It's past tense. It's done. It's already done. It's an accomplished fact. And that's going to come to a no good end. And that's why America is slipping in its academic role in the world from being the number one, you know, country with the smartest people and the most talent to mediocre. And now we're just average, number 16. So that's where that's at. And if you want your children to be mediocre, send them to public school. But if you want your children to excel, and you want your children to practice the Ten Commandment model, then we have to do something more intelligent and more positive in order to achieve that outcome. Here's 10 top things that your kids will not learn in public school. The author, Charles Sykes, he's the author of Dumbing Down Our Kids. He offers the following list of what children will not learn in today's feel-good, politically correct curriculum, which actually provides no content of reality, setting them up for failure in the real world. Use this list to protect your own children from their inevitable reality shock. You see, there's a reality out here. I'm an old-timey employer, and I want to tell you, and I've reported on this before, here's what an employer is looking for in a prospective employee. I can go out in the world today, as bad as the economy is, and I can make my business work. I can go out and get a job. I know what it is that an employer is looking for. I can go hire myself a job anywhere I want. I know what that guy wants in an employee, and I can provide what it is that he wants, and he'll hire me and fire you. So I have reported on that from time to time, and I teach that in my business school. There isn't any reason for you to be unemployed. You can go out and hire yourself a job anywhere, anytime. You have to give to the employer what it is he wants. And as a salesman, you have to give to the customer what it is that he wants to buy. And if you give the guy what it is he wants to buy, he's going to buy it from you. And if you don't give him what he wants to buy, then he isn't going to buy that from you. He's going to go somewhere where he can get what he wants. So rule number one, he says, life is not fair, so get used to it. And I want to second that. It is true that the world turns and the world is not fair. There's all kinds of unfair going on out there. So get used to the idea that there isn't a level playing field out there and the world isn't fair. So let's go out and overcome it. That's the bottom line. Number two, the world won't care about your self-esteem. The world will expect you to accomplish something before you feel good about yourself. I can tell you as an employer, you know, I'm looking for certain results, and if I don't get the results, I'll get somebody that can perform. And then the guy that gets fired feels real bad, and he loses his self-esteem. He says, oh, my God, he's not prepared for the real world. He didn't learn rule one. Life isn't fair, so get used to it. Number three, you will not make $40,000 a year right out of high school, and you won't be vice president with a car phone until you earn both. But that's what people expect. You know, when they go to work, they expect to go right to the top of the ladder, and they don't expect any work involved in it. I don't know why that expectation is there, but I can tell you that when people are looking for work and they want to go right to the top of the ladder and they don't want to work and perform and show me that this is why you should give me this. Number four, if you think your teacher is tough, you wait until you get a boss. He doesn't have tenure. Got that? Yeah, that's right. When you go to work for me, you'll find out where the real world is. That's what life is all about. So when you get out here into the workplace and you can't find a job, it's because you don't know how. I'm watching television. I see all these people out here. You know, I can't find a job. I've been unemployed now for all these months and months, and I'm. Those are lemmings that are filling out job applications. I've covered that a time or two here on programs here. If you want a job, you can go get one. Oh, it isn't going to pay you what you were getting at your last job, and it isn't going to be the same job with all the benefits. And so your problem is, well, unless I can get that, I ain't going to work. Well, okay, you're going to be unemployed a long time. That's where reality is at. Number five, flipping burgers is not beneath your dignity. Your grandparents had a different word for burger flipping. They called it opportunity. Opportunity. So you start out flipping burgers, but your objective is to become the manager of the restaurant. Now you got 20, 30 people working in this restaurant, and only one of them is going to be the manager, and I intend to be the next one. Now if you go in there with that kind of an attitude, you probably will succeed. What happens to the other 29? Well, they're mediocre at best, and that's all that they can achieve in life is mediocrity. And that's because they went to a mediocre school, and mediocrity is all that they know in life. They cannot excel because they don't know what excellence is. And they can't succeed because they're liars, thieves and cheats, and nobody wants to reward lying, stealing, and cheating. If you think that's correct, leave your house unlocked and reward the burglars, the thieves, when they come in to rob you. Don't report it to the police. I mean, if you want to be robbed, you know, leave your house open. It'll happen. And see how that feels. Is that something that you really liked? Number six, if you mess up, it's not your parents' faults. So don't whine about your mistakes. Learn from them. That's one of the big lessons of life. Can you learn from your own mistakes? My old dad said there's no better way to learn in life than to learn from your mistakes. But he said it's a god-awful hard way to learn. Now, there's better, easier ways to learn. You can learn from the mistakes of others. You take a look at that guy over there. Is that what you want to do? Is that what you want to be? Is that the level you want to achieve? Do what he did, and you can probably do the same thing. So if he's a failure, stick with it. Now, before you were born, your parents... I can't read that one there. That one's a little tough to read. Number eight. Your school may have done away with winners and losers, but life has not. In some schools, they have abolished failing grades. They'll give you as many times as you want to get the right answer. Well, okay, that may be the case. But in the real world, that doesn't work that way. In fact, in the real world, when I was a kid and went out in the woods to get a job, I didn't have any experience and they didn't want to hire me. And I said, I'll work for you free if you'll give me a chance. And so Larry Brown said, hire him. I had exactly 5 days to learn the job. At the end of 5 days, I learned the job and I was hired on. Those are the days when you could learn the skills that you needed by being taught and trained, and you could do it in a week, not in years and semesters. We didn't go to vocational training in college in 2 years and we'd learn to be an auto technician. I mean, you can do it or you can't. You've got the talent for it or the ability to learn it or you don't. And there's a lot of jobs out there that you're not competent or qualified for. You don't have the talent to learn it. Get into something that you can learn. Get into something that you like. But you know, you got schools out here in propaganda and they say, well, come over here to this technical college and we'll teach you to be a dental assistant. We'll teach you to be an auto technician. And you hate getting your fingers dirty. How in the hell can you work on cars if you can't stand to get your hands dirty? That's not the business for you. Number nine, life is not divided into semesters. You don't get summers off. And very few employers are interested in helping you find yourself. And you have to do that on your own time. And rule number 10, television is not real life. In real life, people actually have to leave the coffee shop and go to their jobs. Out here in the real world, nobody works. When you're watching television, you know, these people, they never work. They feign work. You know, sometimes they'll show them at the office and they're playing games and pinching the girls on the ass over at the water cooler or something. In the real world, that isn't the way that works. And your productivity is being monitored constantly. And just as a word of observation here, you have to produce at least double what you're being paid. If you're being paid $10 an hour, you have to produce 20. And that doesn't make you a profitable servant. That means that we're going to hang on to you because you're just barely able to hang on by your fingernails. If you're really a profitable servant, you'd make double or triple what you're being paid for the company. And that's what makes you a profitable servant. And if you're a profitable servant, they won't be able to drive you away with a club. I mean, if you want tenure in a company, you make sure that you're producing two or three times what you're being paid. Nobody's going to fire you. They're going to love you. They'll take care of you. And then you'll make it there. But that isn't what we're teaching our students in our public schools. But it's what you can teach your students in your home school. Now, here's a quickie over here. Zero tolerance in our schools. Hard work ad is discriminatory. Advertising for enthusiastic hard workers called offensive by a job center in England. See, the ad says hard work. No, that's a discrimination against people that don't want to put in hard work. Number two, children suspended for playing cops and robbers on the schoolyard. Number three, 12-year-old was arrested for stomping in a mud puddle. Number four, an Eagle Scout was suspended for having a pocket knife, an axe, and a cell phone. Number five, a boy prevents suicide gets suspended. Number six, sixth graders suspended for advocating that teachers be armed. Number seven, second graders suspended for having paper guns. Second graders, he had a paper gun, suspended from school. Eight, seventh grade Kansas boy suspended for drawing Confederate flag in math class. Free speech suffers a blow in England. Stockport College bans words like ladies and gentlemen. And who can forget the second grader in Georgia who was suspended for kissing a classmate, the girl suspended for the butter knife she brought to cut the birthday cake she was going to share with her class, or the girl who was suspended for sharing a breath mint with a schoolmate, and so on. These are the kinds of things that go on in public school that are insane. We call it politically correct. It's political correctness over here. Now, to suspend a child for playing cops and robbers on the school ground. It is political correctness for a 12-year-old to be arrested for stomping in a mud puddle. Or a Eagle Scout being suspended for having a pocket knife, an axe, and a cell phone. Or a boy who prevents suicide gets suspended from school. Evidently, the way he prevented this was wrong. It doesn't have the stories here. This is another eight good reasons to take your child out of the public school and educate them in your own home school, where you can instill values in your children. For instance, what's wrong with your child learning how to use a pocket knife, learning how to use an axe, and learning how to use a cell phone? Aren't those three ordinary, everyday, garden variety activities? I mean, I live out here in the country. How do you split wood without an axe? The pocket knife. How do you cut the ropes on a bale of hay or cut the net off of a hay bale without a pocket knife? Don't you think that children should learn how to use tools like that? Are we going to raise a society of people that don't know what a pocket knife, an axe is, or how to use it? Is this what you want? I mean, I look at this and I say, my God, have we gone totally mad? Have we lost our way, lost our bearings? Yeah, I'm about out of time here, boys and girls. We'll take this up next time. We're talking about homeschool. Let me give you a reminder here. You've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the law school and the Law Hour, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, that's eight schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. And the law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. Now, all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, our time's up. I got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, Thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.